I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 8th, and we have a lot to talk about. Every day, 12 Canadians are diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Facing one of the highest MS rates in the world and a geographically large country, the MS Society of Canada is the only national voluntary organization in Canada that supports both MS research and provides services to more than 90,000 people living with MS. The MS Society of Canada just concluded their 2020 MS Connect conference, and the conference featured great presentations on so many of the topics that people affected by MS need to hear about, including cognitive dysfunction, fatigue, diet, and restoring lost function. Joining me today is Dr. Pamela Valentine, who is not only the president and CEO of the MS Society of Canada. Dr. Valentine is also a multi-award-winning neuroscientist. During our conversation, we'll be talking about COVID-19, we'll be talking about progressive MS, and we're going to wade into some of the most pressing issues facing the MS community today. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Pamela Valentine, there are a few other things that you should know about. A research team completed a small 14-month randomized study of 48 people with active progressive MS, treating some of the study participants with mesenchymal stem cells, while other study participants received injections lacking those stem cells. And in clinical trials, this type of injection would be referred to as a sham injection. It looks the same and feels the same, but it lacks an important component. In this case, the sham injections didn't contain any stem cells. Well, at the one-year follow-up, about 10% of the participants who received that sham injection showed no evidence of disease activity, while about 59% of the participants who received the injection of mesenchymal stem cells showed no evidence of disease activity. Additionally, the participants who were treated with mesenchymal stem cells experienced other benefits on their relapse rate, monthly changes of the T2 lesion load on their MRI, improvements in their timed 25-foot walking test, improvements in the 9-hole peg test, and improved cognitive tests. In reporting the results of the study, the research team concluded that a larger Phase 3 clinical trial is warranted to confirm these findings. And these are pretty encouraging findings. Now, there are also other mesenchymal stem cell clinical trials that are already underway, and we hope that they'll also be reporting positive outcomes. So it's probably a good time to talk about some of the details about these stem cells. There are different types of stem cells. Mesenchymal stem cells are adult stem cells that can be found in several different places in the body, including bone marrow, skin, and fat tissue. And they produce cells that help other cells function properly. So the hope is that mesenchymal stem cells can produce cells that will help repair the neural cells that are damaged by MS. You might remember just a few weeks ago, the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee published their recommendation of autologous hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. Now, I'll also remind you, this recommendation comes with several specific caveats, and if you're interested in reviewing the details of the MS Society's recommendation, please be sure to check out episode number 166 of Real Talk MS, and you'll find a link to that episode in today's show notes. But what I want to point out today is that hematopoietic stem cells are different from mesenchymal stem cells. Now, they're also found in bone marrow, but hematopoietic stem cells produce the cells that make up our blood and our immune system. Hematopoietic stem cell transplantation is considered a rebooting of the immune system, And the idea is that when the immune system is rebooted, it's rebooted without any autoimmune disease. There are other types of stem cells for us to talk about, but I'll hold off on that for now, as I think we're pretty assured of hearing a lot more news as additional stem cell clinical trials report their findings. And I'm hopeful that the news continues to be as encouraging as the news that we're talking about today. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this successful mesenchymal stem cell clinical trial, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Over the past couple of years, we've had lots of opportunities to talk about the connection between the gut microbiome and MS. And just as a quick refresher, the gut microbiome is the collection of friendly bacteria, fungi, and viruses that colonize the gastrointestinal tract. And we know that the gut microbiota protects us from disease-causing organisms, and we also know that the gut microbiota plays a role in our immune system and our body's inflammatory response. And we've heard and read that a lot, that there's a quote-unquote connection between the gut and our inflammatory response. But what's that connection all about? Well, we may have taken a step closer to understanding that connection. An international research team has identified a specific type of cell called IgA-producing B cells, which are produced in the gut, but then travel to the brain of MS patients during MS relapses. And these cells produce anti-inflammatory molecules, which may help resolve those relapses. And this is pretty interesting for a couple of different reasons. First off, it contributes to our understanding of the specific role of the gut microbiome in people with MS. The research team analyzed these IgA B cells in the gut, blood, brain tissue, and cerebrospinal fluid of people with MS during relapses, people with MS during remission, people with other neurodegenerative diseases, and healthy individuals, and they found that the levels of these IgA B cells in the cerebrospinal fluid of people with MS during relapses was significantly higher compared to every other group analyzed, including MS patients during remission. They were also able to see that during a relapse, these IgA B cells traveled through the blood to MS brain lesions, where they produced an anti-inflammatory molecule called IL-10. And finally, the researchers were able to see that these IgA B cells didn't target myelin as other B cells do, but instead targeted specific strains of gut bacteria that are associated with inflammation in MS. So I said that this study was interesting for a couple of reasons. Because besides discovering the role that these IgA B cells play in resolving MS relapses, this study also illustrated the complex role that B cells play when it comes to multiple sclerosis. It's complex because we can think of a whole category of powerful disease-modifying therapies that are referred to as B cell depleting therapies. Now, the reason those therapies are among some of the most effective MS treatments is because another type of B cell plays a role in attacking and damaging myelin. This type of B cell is called an IgG B cell, and it's considered a major player in promoting the neuroinflammation that damages the central nervous system and leads to MS disability. That's why the MS treatments that cause mild B cell depletion reduce inflammation in people with MS. But too much B cell depletion can actually cause MS exacerbation. So this discovery has informed us about the existence of and the role played by IgA-producing B cells when it comes to resolving MS relapses. It's identified a specific connection between the gut microbiome and the body's ability to mediate an MS relapse. These cells are kind of like the fire department, and when the alarm goes off that myelin is under attack, They travel through the bloodstream from the gut to the central nervous system, and they release molecules that put out the fire. And this discovery has identified a whole new path for scientists to explore, perhaps finding ways to leverage these IgA B cells as a future disease-modifying therapy. You can be sure that there's more news to come here as other researchers begin to focus on this specific strain of B cells. And when there's additional news, you know we'll be talking about it. In the meantime, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. A study from a team at the Mayo Clinic has shown that women who have never given birth or who have begun menopause at the age of 45 or younger were more likely to develop progressive MS earlier. The study showed that women in these two groups experienced the onset of progressive MS at a mean age of about 42 years old, while women who had given birth or who had begun menopause after the age of 45 experienced the onset of progressive MS at a mean age of about 47 years old. Now, other research has shown that a relationship exists between sex hormones and MS. The most obvious evidence is the fact that women are much more likely to develop MS. And while it sounds strange being placed into this context, being a woman is one of the strongest risk factors for developing MS. Research has also demonstrated that elevated estrogen levels seem to have a protective effect. Women have a reduced risk of MS relapse during their pregnancy, but an increased risk of relapse after delivery. And in this newly published study, the Mayo Clinic team analyzed survey results from 137 postmenopausal MS patients and compared that with 396 age-matched healthy controls without MS. And while the results of this survey analysis are interesting, there are a couple of caveats that we should acknowledge. First, most of the MS patients represented in this study had progressive MS. And they were older, which means they didn't receive disease-modifying therapy early in their disease course because it didn't exist. And that in itself may have produced a different outcome. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. So much of what we talk about every week on Real Talk MS is based on the results of clinical trials. Clinical trials represent the roadmap to new treatments, vaccines, and cures. But just as a clinical trial is the first step toward a new treatment, it can also be the first step toward healthcare inequity. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration tells us that 80% of the clinical trial participants in the United States are white, and just 7% of U.S. clinical trial participants are African American. And if we intend to resolve the inequities in our healthcare system, we need to begin by increasing African American participation in clinical trials. And this couldn't be more true or more important for people living with MS. It's been shown that African Americans with MS experience a more severe disease course. So it's vital that researchers and clinicians know that new therapies will be effective in the African American population. It's hard to know that without African American participation in clinical trials. So to that end, I'm happy to share with you that the Bristol-Myers Squibb Foundation has partnered with National Medical Fellowships in funding a $100 million program designed to improve diversity in clinical trials. The new initiative will train 250 new clinical investigators who are members of minority communities or have demonstrated a commitment to increasing diversity in clinical trials. The program is going to support investigators in developing clinical trial sites in the United States that are located among diverse and disproportionately burdened patient populations. Then, researchers will work within and alongside these communities to design and conduct clinical trials. Applications for fellowships open next month, and candidates must be early-stage investigators with an interest in clinical research in cancer, cardiovascular disease, and immunologic disorders. They must be medical doctors or doctors of osteopathic medicine and be members of an underrepresented U.S. population. Now, non-minority applicants must have a track record of promoting diversity in clinical trials. And this is really a great step forward. Kudos to Bristol-Myers Squibb for putting their $100 million where their mouth is and choosing to do something that actually creates change instead of joining the crowd and wringing their hands over the lack of diversity in clinical trials. I hope we're seeing just the very tip of a very important iceberg. Now, for more information about fellowship eligibility or program details, you can send an email to dctcdpinfo@nmfonline.org, and we'll include that email address in today's show notes. Each year, MS Research Australia produces a video research update specifically for people affected by MS. This year's hour-long update includes information about the future of remyelination therapies, emerging MS treatments, and lifestyle changes that can help better manage MS symptoms. And if you'd like to check out the video, I think you'll find it to be an hour well spent, and you'll find a link to that video in today's show notes. And if you're a regular listener, you'll probably recognize that the topics that are covered in the MS Research Australia video are some of the same topics that we've been discussing throughout the year. We know that multiple sclerosis doesn't respect borders. It doesn't matter whether you happen to live in Australia, the UK, Russia, Canada, the US, MS just doesn't play favorites. And I especially enjoy talking about research being done all around the world, because I know that people living with MS don't really care where the breakthroughs happen. They just want them to happen faster. And we sometimes can lose sight of the efforts being made everywhere to end MS. Those efforts are particularly important to people living in Canada, a country with one of the highest rates of MS in the world. And the MS Society of Canada is committed to supporting MS research while also supporting the 90,000 people across Canada who are living with MS. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, the President and CEO of the MS Society of Canada, Dr. Pamela Valentine. Just a couple of weeks ago, the MS Society of Canada hosted the 2020 MS Connect Conference, a conference specifically for people affected by MS. Of course, this year, the MS Connect Conference was virtual, and the conference featured presentations from leading MS researchers on topics that included cognition, nutrition, fatigue, and neurorehabilitation. And it was my honor to have an opportunity to participate in one of the conference sessions. Today, it's my pleasure to be talking with Dr. Pamela Valentine, the President and CEO of the MS Society of Canada. Dr. Valentine is also a trained, multi-award-winning neuroscientist, having started her career as a faculty member at the University of Calgary at Hotchkiss Brain Institute, and then moving to Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, where she held a number of leadership roles. Today, Dr. Valentine serves as a member of the Board of Trustees for the MS International Federation, an executive committee member of the International Progressive MS Alliance, an executive committee member of Patient-Reported Outcomes Initiative for MS, a member of the Canada Post Accessibility Advisory Panel, and several other scientific advisory boards. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Valentine.
Thank you very much, John. So happy to be here with you.
You know, what I found remarkable about the MS Connect Conference was how it managed to touch on so many of the topics that are important to people affected by MS. But I'd love to get your thoughts on what caught your attention during the conference.
Well, I was really pleased to see the focus on, you know, all sorts of aspects of symptom management. That was by design, because we asked people living with MS what they wanted to hear about. But I was equally impressed, you know, about the rigor of the science that was being discussed in terms of really better understanding the underlying mechanisms of the disease and the progress that's being made in terms of new and different ways to approach, you know, treatment therapies that will become available undoubtedly in the years to come.
You know, when people think about treatment and MS, they often think about pharmacological interventions, waiting for the next disease-modifying therapy to be approved. But as we heard a few times during MS Connect, in addition to disease-modifying therapies, there are also lifestyle choices, like adding exercise to your daily routine, that have been shown to measurably improve the quality of life for someone living with MS. So as a neuroscientist, what role do you see these lifestyle choices playing in someone's overall MS treatment strategy?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, increasingly it has been recognized that the treatment approach needs to be holistic. It needs to be multifaceted. That for many people, a disease-modifying therapy is game-changing in the way that it helps treat their disease, but equally, you know, modifiable by all those risk factors. And part of the focus of this conference was to begin to give people an idea of, you know, the really fundamental research that's being done to understand why that might be the case. We know that exercise makes you feel better. We know that it affects the comorbidities that tend to go along with MS, but there's increasing understanding of how that you know, affects the body at a fundamental mechanistic cellular level that helps us to understand why these types of lifestyle changes modify the disease course. And that blend that was part of, you know, the focus of the conference is really important to understand. It's not an either or, it's an and in terms of how people are going to, you know, find the approach that best fits their particular set of circumstances in living with MS.
Canada has one of the highest rates of multiple sclerosis in the world. And I'm wondering what you see as some of the biggest challenges facing the MS community today.
Well, I think there's many. You know, if we think about COVID, I think one of the major aspects we're dealing with is that sense of isolation. You know, the mental health challenges that somebody is facing in not being able to interact and connect with their community and their communities, their MS communities. So, you know, with our office doors closed, you know, and having to be in a virtual space, Canada is a big country, making sure that we aren't leaving people behind, that we are, you know, finding ways via technology and probably old school beyond technology to make sure that the MS community, you know, continues to connect, continues to support one another as I think one of the more immediate challenges we have in front of us.
It's been interesting in one respect. They say that many people living with MS are faring reasonably well during the pandemic because they have already learned how to best move forward in life in an uncertain environment, which is new to people who may not be living with a chronic illness and are all of a sudden faced with a pandemic that limits our ability to get out and be with others and do simple things like get to some of the appointments that are important to us. So I think on the one hand, that's been a plus, but what we also know is that a very significant percentage of people who are diagnosed with MS tend to be diagnosed with depression. And when you add that factor of isolation to someone who may already be struggling with depression, that can be a formula for some tough times.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's the prolonged nature. You know, it's not that it's just been the last 9 months, which has been extremely difficult. It's the many months ahead of us until we can get a vaccine that has penetration at a population level that's really going to reduce the risk for people. you know, people are scared, and it doesn't matter, you know, who you are, if you have MS, if you don't have MS, if you're a caregiver for somebody who lives with MS, you know, we're all grappling with how to manage that risk level and in the long term. So I think it's extremely difficult. I have heard many people say, you know, that they living with MS, you know, feel somewhat that they have coping mechanisms, but everyone has a greater limitation on those ways in which they might cope. You know, the ability to get to a rehabilitation, the ability to meet with your girlfriends for coffee. You know, so I think it is having an impact on everyone, and for the person with MS. The other aspect I think is that people living with MS have had to learn a level of resilience, and you know, I'm always incredibly astounded at how resilient the community is. And I think it's because of that unpredictable nature of the disease that they have to dig down and find that. So I'm trying to keep that at the top of my personal page in terms of, you know, how I'm personally coping with an organization that, you know, has undergone a lot of change in 9 months and still needs to be there for the MS community.
Well, full disclosure, you and I have gotten to know each other through our work in the International Progressive MS Alliance. And one of the things that really sets the Alliance apart in its mission is the concept of global collaboration. As an executive committee member of the Alliance, I'm wondering if you can share your thoughts on this unique global response to solving the complexities of progressive MS.
Yeah, I think in the very first meeting I came to, you would have heard me say this, John, and I've been thrilled to have the chance to get to work with you in what I think is a really unique global collaboration. And I say collaboration because it's more than just an alliance. It is really some like organizations having come together, identified the gap that we wanted to target, that there wasn't a treatment that was available for the progressive forms of this disease, and uniquely brought catalyzed some activity to bring the brightest minds in the world together to start tackling it. And when I look at the level of progress that's been made, the pipeline that I can see coming, a really robust pipeline for potential new and innovative treatment approaches, it's really incredible. I've spent my career in the health domain, and I can't name another disease area that has as tightly knit a network that is actively working together. And I think when you look at that progress that's been made and the acceleration that I think I've seen over the last 5 years, it's because of those connections that we're moving at an accelerated rate. To think that MS has gone from three, I'd call fairly blunt instruments in terms of the treatments that were available just 20 years ago, to where we are today in Canada, 14 or 15 available treatments in the US, you know, a couple of more. There's probably not another disease course, save maybe HIV, that's made that much game-changing progress as has been made in MS. And I'm really excited to see where we go in the next 10 years, because I think there will be treatments for progressive MS. I think there will be drugs that target repair and undoing some of the damage that you know has been done to MS. And in the longer term, I really feel like we're going to be able to identify and predict the onset of the disease better, identify those at high risk, and intervene earlier so that the disease never gets a toehold. And so I really think without that global connectivity, those things wouldn't happen, and certainly wouldn't happen in the kinds of timeframes that I think we'll see them happen.
All I can say is yes to everything. Absolutely. Could not agree more. As we reach the end of 2020, as you've pointed out already, the world's come through a year like none we've ever experienced before. I'm wondering, heading into 2021, what are some of the priorities for the MS Society of Canada?
Well, I think, you know, the top line is engage, is, you know, create a strong sense of community, be there for one another. If we did nothing else in 2021, but support one another as a MS community, we'd be ahead of the game. That said, we don't want to take our foot off the gas. And the MS Society of Canada, I think, has been quite brave, perhaps, in continuing to put out research investments despite a massive downfall in our revenue sources. We, as a health charity in Canada, like many other charities, have been very reliant on fundraising from a grassroots, in-person, event-related kind of an approach. And we know that we're not willing to put people at risk. And probably, you know, that affects our revenue for 2021. So to continue to make sure that we're investing in the people, investing in making sure that the research capacity is maintained and is strong and is well connected and talking to one another and sharing ideas is probably the biggest focus that we'll have in 2021, so that when we come out of COVID, that overall momentum, the progress that I just talked about, you know, it isn't far behind, that we're really continuing to move forward in really important ways.
I read recently that 12 Canadians are diagnosed with MS every day. Dr. Pamela Valentine, thank you for all that you and the MS Society of Canada do to work toward a day when that's no longer a reality. And thanks for talking with me today.
My great pleasure. Thank you, John.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/171. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19, so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that, as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.